fighters, welcome to the Contractor Fight Podcast. Just like every other Tuesday, today we're going to dig into the topic of sales. We're going to talk all things communication, sales, money mindset, how your brain should approach the sales game, and some other cool actions for you to take consistently that will move the sales needle. Appreciate you guys being here. Give us a review. Share this episode with another contractor that you know could use it. And without further ado, let's talk about sales. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Contractor Fight Podcast. I'm here with Derek and Steve. What's up, guys?
Howdy. Oh,
not much.
I was just bragging.
We have a great topic for today, and I'm interested to get into it.
What is the topic today, Steve?
The topic today is, in honor of one of my son, my youngest son started a new company and he got his first job yesterday. Now, he started this company in November. Mm-hmm. So he shelled out literally $75,000 of his own dollars. We've all been here. We all set up our own first company somehow.
Yep.
And there's a certain period between when you start your company, at least in your head or on paper, and you get your first job.
Right.
And it's very anxious time in there because you're thinking, God, I'm all dressed up. I have no place to go. I've done everything I could possibly do. I just want my phone to ring and get a single job. So,
have you seen Brother, Where Art Thou with George Clooney, that old movie back in the day? Do you ever see that?
No.
It reminds me when you first start your business. All right. So several times through the movie, they'd be like about to get killed or hiding from somebody, whatever. And Clooney through the whole movie, his line was, "We're in a tough spot here. We're in a tough spot here." And I picture that's what you're talking about, Steve. Like, he started in November. He's shelling out all this money. In my mind, I'm like, we're in a tough spot here. We're in a tough spot here. So I was just bragging before we hit record here officially. And then you told me to wait because you said you wanted me to just share it on the show that I'm on day 36 right now, 75 hard. And I started at about 209.5 pounds. And actually, I'm not trying to lose weight. That's the funny thing. I was trying to get rid of my gut. My body weight, though, has dropped. I'm 197.1 as of Wednesday, March 30th at 7 a.m. when I weighed myself. I only weigh myself once a week. And I thought I was about 204, 205. And wow. I got on the scale this morning. I was 197. And I was like, holy shit. And yesterday I was getting my, I get testosterone shots once a week and I was at the low T thing getting it. And they weigh you. And in the middle of the day, when I've got all this water in me, I've eaten food, all this other, I was 203. And that's when I was kind of like, wow, this might be good. You know? So I was thinking this morning I'd weigh in and be like 201 maybe or something when I saw that yesterday. But so anyway, I was sharing that with you. And then you said, Tom, wait until we start the show. So I have no idea what you wanted me to wait for.
Well, I wanted to ask, like, at some point this shit gets hard. Like, it's, I would assume, like anything else, it's pretty easy in the beginning, but now you're day 30, what did you say? 37?
Six. Yeah.
36. So day 36, has it gotten hard yet?
That's what's funny. Once the decision was made to do this, it's really been a non-issue. The hardest thing is when I've traveled the few times during the last 30 something days, I've been out of town and just having to work them around the travel schedule. So for instance, I had a super early morning flight one day that I was like, when am I going to do my workout? And I actually did it at midnight at 12:01 a.m. And then I slept for 3 hours, got up and then went to catch my plane. And I got the first workout of the day done because I knew just the travel day was crazy. And then when I landed where I was going, I checked into the hotel, put on my weight vest and went for a run and got my second one in. So traveling's tough. And honestly, the hardest part of day one of this thing, starting it, was the water, drinking a gallon. Because I'd been drinking maybe 30 to 40 ounces of water a day before that. And a gallon's 128. And so that first day, I was like, how the hell am I going to do this? But honestly, from day two forward, it was just like, okay, this is the new normal. Right now, I'm feeling getting the shit done is actually pretty easy. What's hard right now, somebody else shared this with me that for them, it was the same thing around that 30-day mark or so, 30, 40 days. My body is hurting. It's feeling the grind of the workouts. Yeah, the queen's in the background yelling down the stairs right now, you need a massage. So it's not like I'm working my ass off, but you know, there's zero rest days, right? So it's just, you know, that's so my hips, my knees, it's still cold here in Colorado. So I think that contributes to it a little bit. What's cool is, you know, I'm down to this 197 here this morning and, you know, my abs are actually starting to show again, which is kind of cool. I haven't seen them in years, you know, so that's motivating me to step on the gas more and even push harder.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Well,
Derek, have you ever done 75 hard, Derek?
No, I think it's just insanity. So you guys doing it, good for you.
I did it a couple of years ago, as you both know. And Tom, I'll just give you some sage advice, buddy. It's not the five physical things you have to do every single day. It's remembering to do the five physical things you have to do. And the problem is there's no forgiveness. It doesn't matter what day you mess up, start over.
Yep.
So it could be day 74 and you simply forget to take a freaking picture. And guess what day you're on the next day? One.
Yep. You're on one.
One.
That anxiety builds every day and exponentially towards the end. And so that was a tough, it was all mental for me. I had no physical anything because I hike and all that shit. But yeah. God, that remembering. I used to have an acronym because you got to take water. What are the things you have to do?
It's 2 45-minute workouts a day. One has to be outside.
Workout and water.
Yep. Take a progress picture, 10 pages of personal development reading, drink a gallon of water, follow any diet you want that's in line with your goals. And for me, it was reduced belly fat and then no cheat meals or alcohol. But Steve, I don't know if they had this when you did it, but they have an app now. Okay. So when
I did it in the Stone Ages 2 years ago.
Yeah. When you do it, you check the box. And then what's cool is you guys know I'm a tracker. So I have this app open and I have my food tracker app open, my Fitness Pal, where I log everything. And so every time I have these 24-ounce glasses right here in front of you, it's a glass for those that can't see it. It's just a glass that I have water. It's 24 ounces. And every time I drink one, I open up the Fitness Pal and I log the water and say I did 24. And so my goal is by 3 p.m. usually to get all my gallon of water done. And I usually do it maybe around 6. I got 24 more ounces to go like at 6 o'clock a couple nights a week or whatever. But the app, and then it also reminds you at like 11 o'clock at night, hey, did you do all your tasks for the day? So that notifies you on the phone and this and that. So the tracking is, and remember, he's actually been pretty simple because of the app.
There you go. Yeah. So they've just removed this, the app and stuff removed 100% of all the anxiety I was having over the whole thing. Yep. So
you should do it again, Steve.
No, I don't want to do it again. I did it. I was not going to lose at it. It was fucking hard, but it was mental. I can't tell you how many times at 11:59 I run in my closet, take a picture because I can't really remember if I did or not.
Yeah.
And then so because I don't want to, you know, it's like everything else. You have a goal. Guys like us, we have a goal, and very, very seldom do we fail when it's achievable through hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But And the way all this ties in, by the way, our topic today is your first job in business. In other words, you start a company. There's a certain that we call it the latency period between when you start the company and when someone actually gives you some money to do a job, and you're nervous as all get out. I want you to remember, what was your very first job you got and how excited were you? And this is what happens on day one of day 75 hard. On day one, this is cool. This is easy. I'm excited. I got goals. I got this. I got that. And every day you go through it, it starts to beat you down. And then you find a podcast like ours to help lift you up again. But I want to talk about your first jobs, the excitement. How did it go? And just a little bit about it, because I want everybody to know that we all started literally from the very beginning, like they started from the beginning. Who you're listening to now does not even resemble who we used to be when we first started our businesses.
My first job, there was this guy I was selling tools and nails to carpenters on job sites. And I went to church one night or one day, whatever it was. And I heard this guy at our church talking about how he's having his house remodeled and he needs a painter. And I'm like, well, shit, I don't want to paint. I worked for my uncle and all this other stuff. I ran his crews for a while. And And I was kind of teetering back and forth on whether or not I wanted to start my own painting business. And I had a conversation with him. He hired me. It was a $10,000 job that should have been $40,000. But it was the first job that I got, and I went out and I spent $50, $80, whatever it was, on one of those metal yard signs, and I put it in the yard and I was all proud of it. I bought a van, not for $75,000 investment like your son has invested in his business, but I bought a van for my uncle. It was like one of those old blue paneling Econoline vans that was converted into a painter's van with racks on the inside and ladder racks. It was $1,100 and he threw in a 24-foot ladder, and I was in business and I was painting this dude's house. And then I painted the neighbors, did the neighbor's deck and then some things inside for him and other exterior things. And it just, my boss that I was working for selling nails and tools knew I was doing this business on the side, and he hired me to wash and stain his deck. And it took me 2 hours to wash it, 2-3 hours to wash it. Took me about 8 hours to stain it. I charged him $1,600. And that first month, you guys, I thought I was fucking loaded, man. I was like, this is easy. This business thing is a piece of cake.
Yeah.
And
oh, good deal.
And then there was Bill's job, and I sold it. I've told the story 1,000 times. I sold it for $28,000. It cost me $45,000 to do it. And it took 13 months to get it done because he was GC in his own house. So it was he's the guy that called me on Christmas morning to tell me he didn't like the stain color of his stairs. And I didn't know about change orders and all this stuff. So if it cost me 45, guys, just math quiz here, what should I have charged?
90
to 100 is what I should have charged. And it cost, and I charged him $28,000. And that job was, I think, even though it was many, many years before I started the contractor fight, that job, I think, planted the seed for what we now have in the contractor fight of all the shit that comes out of my mouth, because that's really where I got my education. Hey, fighters, I just want to make sure that you're aware that we have an amazing group coaching program helping hundreds of contractors all over the place called Battleground. If you go to thecontractorfight.com/battleground, you'll get access to not just amazing trainings and programs and over a dozen coaching calls a month and this and that, but the greatest community on planet Earth for home improvement contractors to build relationships, level up their game, and kick some serious butt in their business. So head to thecontractorfight.com/battleground, and we'll see you in there when you're ready to grow your business.
So that was my entry to business. How about you, Derek?
You know, when Steve posted that, what we're going to talk about today, I actually didn't go far enough back. I had my dad and I restored, actually his car, a 67 Mustang, and I was just working at a grocery store. So every 2 weeks I got paid, we did something to the car. Finally saved up enough money to paint it. So when it was painted, I love that car so much, I would hand wax it. So birthday came up, and dad bought me an Orbital buffer. And waxing that car with the Orbital buffer was like so easy. It's like, this is amazing. So shortly after that, my dad called where he retired from, and he said, hey, grab your buffer, grab your wax, come up here, and you're going to wax Donna's car for $35. And I went, okay, all right, cool, $35. And I remember just being so nervous that I was actually going to go, because I mean, I wasn't thinking about going into business, but I was literally about to get paid. And I buffed it, and I was so scared, and she paid me, she gave me a $5 tip, so I made $40. I mean, I had probably $5 in wax, so, you know, profit margin's looking pretty good right now. And another person there said, hey, will you wax my car? So I started waxing cars. And then I mentioned to my mom, because she worked at the hospital, I was like, hey, do you think anybody there wants their cars waxed? And next thing you know, I'm in the detail business. And just rolling around in this 67 Mustang, cherry Mustang is black, but man, that thing was always so clean. And then I decided to go into business, and it just went downhill from there. Like, it was just like a fucking Led Zeppelin. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. It wasn't, I started having to advertise. I literally bought a shitty old Jeep. Could see the highway or the road through the floorboard. Had vice grips for a shifter. Didn't even have a top on it. And somebody gave me an old shitty trailer. So I'm pulling like this old shitty 5.8 trailer with a water tank on the back of it. I would drive to all the car lots on Gallatin Road and just pull up and go, hey, can I wash your lot cars for you? I was charging them $2 per car to wash it. And there might be 10 cars.
What was this, 1930 or something, where that was a lot of money?
You would think. Unfortunately, this was like 1993-ish, 4-ish, somewhere around there. Yeah,
so, Tom, that was worth $4 today.
Yeah. And it was just, I didn't have a clue, but I was having fun. Like, that was the whole thing. I enjoyed the shit out of it. And then you kind of start going, oh, wait. Why is the bank account? I keep putting money in the bank account, but it keeps going down. Like, what's going on here? And then I eventually got into the story of the post office and the grass cutting and then why I'm here today. But I even remember, goddamn, Town and Country Ford saw me at one of the car lots, or maybe I went to the car lot. They had 670 trucks on their lot. And I went and talked to the guy.
Discounted, didn't you? Even, you did a volume discount.
Not even times two. Not even times two. A dollar. A fucking dollar. So $670 though, dude.
How long did that take? A week to 10 days
or some shit. Like it was horrible.
Derek made $67 a day, man. Look at that.
Yeah, it was.
You know,
it was
a little beer and weed.
Hey, you know, I got to use their water. And you know the worst part of it though? Just think about that many trucks. I washed the same Ford F-150 at least 200 times before I got to the F-250s and the 350s. And mind you, I didn't even think the 350s or the extended or the dualies to charge a little more. So it just got worse like as it went on. Yeah, it was brutal. And then they bitched about it, you know, water spots or some shit. It was. And I was like, "What'd you get for hiring some hippie with a Jeep, asshole?" Yeah.
Did you have a mullet?
At that point, my mullet was gone.
Okay.
I was actually doing the reverse mullet, where you cut the hair really short in the back and was letting the front grow. That was a different scenario.
So you were party in the front, business in the back, huh?
Absolutely, dude. Man, I've got pictures somewhere. I have to pull those out. That'd be fun to share, like the first. So
you know, we should do that in our battleground group. We should each post a picture of the dorkiest picture we can find of ourselves from back in the day.
Yeah, no, that would be amazing.
You probably had like long hippie hair that was feathered with like a Fu Manchu mustache at some point, you know, big fly collar shirt. Right.
I went to all military high school. And so during the Vietnam War, the end of it. And so by the time I got to college in 1975, I grew my hair out. So I had it shoulder length. But because I was a diver, the chlorine in the water, it makes your hair like straw. So it was like fucking everywhere. I looked like Keith Richards kind of thing, you know. But, you know, it's funny, Tom, you mentioned your Ecolite. That's exactly how I started business. See, the pool thing, I bought a 10-year-old Chevy, I think it's called a Econoline 1500. It had a column shift, and it was a beast, man. In fact, our first job we landed right off the bat was a $25,000. This is 84, so that's probably worth 60 grand today. And it was a sandblast, a big-ass swimming pool, and put a new white coat in it. And of course, the white coat part we subbed out, but sandblasting was all on me. And I remember I showed up to get all the equipment, rental equipment to sandblast. And I got that in my van. And when I came back to get the sand, they couldn't load it up from the back, but they could load it up. Remember those big wide doors on the side? They could barely inch it in. There wasn't a spare inch anywhere. And they could put, now we're putting 3,000 pounds of sand in a car that has a total load of 1,500 pounds. So you know, I learned about shocks and leaf springs and something they call helpers. And a helper is when you put so much weight in your vehicle that there's a special bar that it just won't let it crush the tires.
the helper springs.
Yeah. And but that goddamn van, that thing, I couldn't kill it. Man, we had that for 10 years. I passed it down from employee to employee.
I couldn't kill it. I love it.
Yeah. But we made money. It probably took 2-3 weeks to do this job, but it kept me and one guy busy. That's all we had.
Derek, right from job one, Steve's making money. He didn't fucking get his ass kicked like we did. Like, what the hell?
Well, let's be fair. I just came. I worked 3 years before with another company, and they made me job cost everything. And so we had to come in and figure out what shit cost. And so I knew that much. And so when I bid the job, I did the same thing, you know, and back then it wasn't all 50% in my head, but it was like, huh, cost me 10 grand. I'm charging 20. And that's the way it rolled. So, because I knew one thing, I'm in this for the money. I'm sorry. Everybody starts a business to be free somehow. I wanted financial freedom. And that was, I was solely focused on. And then in my pond company, I'll just go through that thing real quick. I remember my very first job that I got, not the first one I did as a sub, but I opened up a company and I was a spinning instructor. This is the damnedest thing. And I was just telling everybody, I coached in two different gyms, and I was telling them, hey, you ever heard of a pond in your backyard? No. Well, yeah. Well, I'm starting a company. Here we go. And it turns out one of the ladies that was in my spinning class, her husband was a landscaper. And she comes up to me one day after yakking about it for a couple of months and goes, you know, my husband, he's a landscaper and he has a lady who wants two ponds built in her front yard. And I'm like, well, I'm your guy. Of course, I ran out there and I worked it all out. It was and I went, of course, back then you had to charge $6,000 per pond because that's what I was taught by the mothership. And then she had a second pond. And I'm like, okay, I'll just do that for half price. The second pond, you know, I just threw it out there. I didn't fucking know. So it was $9,000. And I was in both of those jobs, the sandblast job, which is the shittiest job on the planet, by the way. And the building of the two ponds, it was just so fun. I was so joyful. I just had a job. I wasn't even really thinking about the money. I was just thinking about, this is fucking awesome. But, you know, me and one guy, it took us an entire week. We built these two ponds out. And, you know, got paid $9,000 and it probably cost me two, maybe three to do it. So I made a shit ton of money there too.
You know, I'm glad you brought up that you were enjoying it and having fun. We don't talk about that enough here. I know we're always hammering the money thing and getting your head out of your ass and things like that. And I think sometimes people think that, I'll just speak for me, that like I found no joy in the actual work. You know what I mean? And I found joy in a lot of the actual work. It's just after a while, you get sick of taking home scraps, you know? And I think that's why I'm so strong on the money side now. But like the most enjoyable day, and it was probably in my second year of business, my cousin and I went to paint this exterior and we had another helper guy. And it was, I don't know, a $12,000 project that took us 3 days to do with the three of us. And most of the time we set up it was one of those summer days where it's like 75. And I remember I could feel it right now. Like I could feel the light breeze. It was like 75 degrees. There was no humidity. It was like the perfect summer day. And I set up one of those canopy type tent things for some shades. We had some sawhorses set up and we were just painting window sash all day. You know, we're just like, we'd pull the windows out and we'd prep them and paint them and cut them in and they dry. We'd put another coat on, we put them back in and we had the tunes cranking. And it was like, if every day could have been like that, I probably would have never left the field. Like that's how much fun I had.
You know, you mentioned that my happiest days always were in the field.
Mm-hmm.
People are shocked when they find out my true origins and who I really am. I'm really a blue collar guy who enjoys, I love the jackhammer. I love laying concrete. I like tile coping, caulking, white coating, building ponds, digging holes, pushing rocks. I mean, I look at all that shit as a workout. And all we did all day long with my crew in my pool, my crew in my pond, we just fucked around all day. We had the best time. Like, I remember one stint, we went through like two straight years of all we did all day long was imitate the Family Guy. You know, somebody always played Peter. Somebody always played that. The pervert guy, you know, somebody always played the baby. And we would actually play the characters all day. And like, instead of saying, you know, give me the rocks, we would be like, you know, Marge, you know, go over there, give me the rocks, you know. And we just, at the end, it was 8-9 hours later, and we just had a ball. And the homeowners would go, I see why you guys do what you do. You just have fun all day long. And we ripped on each other. And those are so joyful. So joyful.
Fighters, I want to invite you to up your sales game. Head to Facebook and type in Contractor Sales Pros and join the conversation of what's going on over there. Contractor Sales Pros is a place to ask questions and share strategies and best practices to help each other get better as sales professionals in the construction industry. So jump in and be part of the conversation today. My uncle, when I worked for my uncle, we did a ton of new construction jobs, paint projects and things like that for these builders. And this is the stupidest thing in the world, but it's like one of those, it's one of those things you had to be there on the crew to like go, this is funny, right? So we used to make these noises back and forth. Like I'd be in one bedroom, another guy would be in another bedroom staining woodwork. We'd be throughout the house. And the noise, my uncle did it one day, and then we just all started doing it. That was the noise. And so all throughout, if it was like too quiet in the house, you'd hear from the corner of the house, like some guy go, you know, like that. And then it'd be like a bunch of these little chirping little birds making these stupid noises.
Yeah, like good night, John boy.
And it made no sense, but it was like our little thing, right? And so then we'd go to 7-Eleven and grab something in the morning, and there'd be a couple guys in the store. One's checking out, you'd hear the from the back of the store, and like we'd start chirping around. That is fun, man. Like it's so stupid, but what's the queen always tell me? She's like, you guys never get out of junior high, right? No matter how old you are, you're still in fucking junior high. So,
and we don't want to get out of junior high.
Hell no. I mean, why would I want to do that?
You know, I'm sorry to cut you off, Derek, but every time I have my old college buddies come over, my wife runs because she fucking hates it because we're just juvenile. We're all 18 again, and we talk and do and say the same shit we did in college, but it is the most joyful night a person could have.
Obviously, I echo that. And I was on a call with Travis yesterday, and they're on the job. They're doing a total tear out and liner replacement. And so, you know, it's pretty shitty in Pond World when you have to do that. It's nasty, it's slimy, and then you build something cool. But I'm talking to Travis, and all I hear in the background is the team laughing and carrying on and doing their little jokes that they do. And I just was just like, oh, damn, I missed that. Mm-hmm. I would rather be out there. I need to do this, but I would rather be out there. So, yeah, it's awesome.
You know, it's funny you say that, Derek, because my forte in the Pond World was doing renovation work, tearing out that shitty liner. And I loved it. I loved ripping because I just kept singing to myself, this is where the money's at. This is where the money's at. Because all those other dumbass pond builders, and if you're a pond builder, I'm just going to apologize now. They're out there going, nope, I'm a total artist. I only start from scratch. I don't touch anyone else's shit. And I'm like, I'll touch anybody else's bank account all day long, you know, because sure, these guys come with this artistic, egotistical bullshit of a brain, yep, and they can't get out of their own way and they're starving. You know, that's where they came up with starving artists. So mm-hmm, I love that shit. And to reiterate what Tom just said, Tom, you and I have a webinar coming up on the Battleground this Friday, yep, about exactly this thing, that it gives me goosebumps right now to talk to you two guys. It brings back these memories, mm-hmm, of why I really love the most about each of these things. You know, when I got with me to the point where I'm sitting up on the desk and I'm running the show, it just wasn't as much fun for me. Like, I love building companies. I didn't like maintaining them, you know? I didn't like running it. It gets boring. Okay, done that, been there. Didn't even matter how much money it spit out. That didn't even fucking matter. Because at least, no matter what you're fucking doing, if you can figure out a way, and this was my saving grace, and I don't know how I got blessed with this attribute, if you can make money all along the way, no matter what you're doing, that's the double win-win right there. So if you can find that joy again and remember why you went in the business, and you can now apply what we're talking about and make money at it, especially if you can make stupid money at it, oh my God, the life you live will be changed forever.
Dude, I look at my first 2 to 3 years of business, and I can run the numbers in my head, knowing what I know now and applying what I know now in those first 2 to 3 years. I would have put, not talking top line sales, I would have put easily another $400,000 to $500,000 a year into my own pocket in those first 2 to 3 years of business. So listen, if you're going to have fun working on the site and enjoy what you do, at least make some fucking money, you know? Yeah. And if you're not having fun, and you don't like what you're doing, at least make some fucking money.
Because it's like the title of your next book, Tom, should be How I Pissed Away $10 Million.
Yeah, there you go.
this very thing, and I've been considering it and thinking about it a lot lately, is just how, well, it's ran a shit business, got around you guys, brought my business into fruition, and then had this amazing gap of time because I was now working on the business and working in the field some, but like was making money and just had this freedom. And then I scaled the positivity of what was happening. And now I'm back to working my ass off all the time. Yeah, we're making money. We're doing shit. It's cool. But it comes from a buddy that I saw at the skate park. I took my boys to the skate park because I just want them to be around it because it's ice skated. It's cool for me. And I think get them around it. He rolls up and I haven't seen him in forever. And we're chatting and he was a plumber by trade. And he now works 6 months and takes off 6 months. And I'm just rolling this whole thing around going, man, just like you're saying, have some fun, make some money, but maybe not just work 50, 60 hours a week to make the money. And right. It's got me thinking a little bit different on, and sure, as the business owner, you do get freedoms when you put people in place. And I do have a lot of freedom, but the stress is still there. It's still, you know, it's still rolling up here. I know everything's okay, but I still got to check in. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to go, you know what? Maybe we don't need that much. So it's funny how you get to a point, and I was sharing this with Tom, you and I had a call a couple weeks back, and it's just, I'm realizing that you do, and Steve, you've expressed this, once you kind of get to a place where you're real comfortable, which you've been striving for, it's not fucking comfortable. Like it's not the good comfortable that you're thinking it is. It's kind of, you're uncomfortable with the comfortableness. It's like, this is not fun. Yeah, I can go and do, but it's not fun.
Let me ask Tom a question, just because you've coached thousands of people. When guys go from small operations and they scale up to a big operation, what percentage of those guys actually make more money when they scale up? Half?
Barely, yeah. I mean, more money comes in, yeah, but you know, you got to go, what's the trade-off, right? Because if they've not gotten themselves out of the middle of the grind and the hamster wheel and all that other stuff, they're just making more money and working harder, which, okay, I guess that's nice to some level. Like, okay, if I'm going to work more and harder, I should make more money. That's a good thing. But usually when they go, I want to scale my business, they don't want to scale how many hours they're working. They want to keep it the same or reduce it because of the other people they put in place. So I'd say about half. You know, that.
So I just wanted to give a shout out to the smaller contractors that are mm-hmm. listening to us right now, because I had a big outfit, 3 offices, 50 trucks, 50 full-time employees, mm-hmm. 3,000 part-time employees. Then I had the pond thing that I just ran out of my garage, one bay of my garage. And I'm at the big convention and the big Kahuna, he's up there and he's showing the evolution of his company, which started in the garage and ended up at this big old utopian style place that they have. And he was literally mocking guys like me, going, get the hell out of your garage. This is no way to run a business. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute. My joy level is way up. My hassle level is way down. I'm making 4 beans a year. That's good enough for me. You know, I got the sweet spot. I don't want to move out of my garage. So I'm just telling you, if you have a sweet gig and you're happy and you can check off the 3 money boxes, and the 3 money boxes are have a good life today, a little something for your kids' college fund, maybe if you got them, and definitely something for retirement. If you can check all that off and have a good life, low key, work out of your garage, go for it. Stay there. Don't scale up. Yeah. Do not scale up because you got to, like Tom says, you got to be careful, man. The trade-off, it ain't fucking worth it.
Well, you got to keep feeding the machine, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I've fed that machine and I'll tell you what, I made more with 9 of the right guys in the field than I did with 26 or 30 or whatever I had, right?
Yeah.
So it's like the revenue was way higher, but the headaches and all that other shit sucked. And this is, I want to give just something tactical for guys right now that go, I want to scale. I want to make more money. A lot of people, you guys, they go, I got to hire a salesperson. Okay. You hire a salesperson and that's all they do. And I'm not even going to talk how you compensate them, but there's always those expenses, right? And this and that, but just think of the leads you have to generate to feed the new salesperson. And there's going to be a ramp up time for that person to get up to speed, to be producing sales at the rate you are. Right. So, I mean, let's just face it, with the 3 of us pretty fucking good salespeople in our own businesses, it's going to take somebody pretty special to outsell us. Okay. And so oftentimes what we guys will do is they have a hard, they can't generate that many leads. So they start giving the leads they would normally take to the new sales guy, and then sales and profits go down. What we did and what we coach people to do all the time, that's why, I mean, Steve, you talk about upselling all the time. We taught our crew leads how to sell, you know, and they can run an appointment that I didn't want to take on the weekend or at night if they wanted to make some more money. We gave them quotas of, hey, if it was a $3,000 paint job, find another $300 on the job that you can sell. And that was just our mentality. I'd rather get my gatekeeper and my crew leads or foreman upselling, and that combined force of people, you're actually going to, in many cases, you're going to bring in, if you don't want to scale too big and stuff and have all the headaches, you're going to bring in a shit ton more profit into the company just from doing that, instead of going and hiring that other salesperson. Because again, you hire that salesperson or two, you have to feed the fucking machine. And that's, some people are, and I'm one of them. I'd rather not feed the machine and just hire the right elite team that I have here, and we're all kicking ass together and shit like that. That's just one example of how
we talk about, would you rather make a hard $2 or an easy $1?
Yep.
And I think the dividing line somewhere is around 30 years old. You finally wake up and go, you know what? I think the easy $1 will work out well.
Yeah. So last takeaways for everybody today. What do you guys got?
Well, I'll just start. And it's your first job. Just remember the joy, because at the end of all this bullshit, you're going to be searching for joy and happiness. That's the truth. I don't care how much money you do have or don't have. You're going to end up there anyway. So you might as well just start now. They did a big ass survey in AARP, the old people, and they came up with 3-word advice for young kids today. And I'm going to give it to you right now. It's called be happy now.
Same thing, right? Like, I'm at that point the last couple, 3 years have gotten to a point where it's like, okay. And then it's like, I was happier, you know, working in the field, really. So got to be happy now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we had this conversation, because like I said earlier, I think a lot of people think that we don't, or I don't think that the craftsmanship is important, that the actual working on the site and things like that. Like, guys, I love that shit. I loved flipping over a 5-gallon bucket and sitting down at lunchtime and laughing with the boys as they're cooking their fucking burritos on a hot plate, right? Or whatever it was. Like, I just love being around the team, but we're on a mission here to change lives. And sadly, so many people, they don't have the money thing right, you know? So, and I believe, because I've lived it, you guys have lived it, I think you can enjoy what you do, you can be happy, and you can make a lot of money. Like, it doesn't have to be an either or. A lot of people think like, oh, I don't want to try to make more money because then I'll have to neglect my family. That's not the case. That's a fucking lie. That's bullshit. Okay. So that's why you got to be around people that are doing it. So anyway, share this with another contractor. Give us a rating. Give us a review. If you want to learn more about what we got going on, head to thecontractorfight.com. Click on, we just changed the menus. It's either coaching or programs. You'll see what the hell we got going on there. And with that, guys, appreciate you. Have an awesome day, and we'll see you all next time.
Until next week.